Monday, our neighbors are back.
Your stupid therapist says that we're having intimacy problems, and now she's cutting me off for a month.
Dr. Chen made us do that, too. Really put the no in November.
Cedric the Entertainer and Max Greenfield star.
I'm already going crazy. I saw two melons on the counter and almost had to take a cold shower.
The CBS original comedy, The Neighborhood.
You and I will always be there to keep each other warm.
Gross.
New Monday, 8, 7 Central on CBS.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench, everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake.
It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 Central on CBS.
Welcome back, folks. We were just talking about the constitutional amendment that's on the ballot December 5th, the election. And there are 30 other states that allow out-of-state residents on their board. So we would not fall in the category of being an exception, more the rule. More than half of the states in this country allow it already. So I just wanted to make that observation as well. Joining us on the line, Stephen Stewart, Research Director for BGR. We have some tax propositions, property tax propositions on the December 5th ballot in the city of New Orleans. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Stephen, let me just start out by saying and getting your reaction to this. I read through y'all's report, which actually was very well done, quite frankly, and congratulations on that. This is a complex vote, and I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are as to how many people will understand exactly what is going on here.
Right. Well, it is complex. There are three separate propositions that people will vote on, and each one does something different. The first proposition deals with infrastructure, and it takes two taxes that are currently paid in New Orleans and combines them into a single tax for streets and drainage and public buildings and vehicles. And then the second proposition is about libraries and early childhood education, where it would take an existing library tax and expand the purposes of it to include not just libraries, but also early childhood education. And then the third proposition would take a single tax that's levied for housing and economic development and replace it with two separate taxes, one for housing, one for economic development. And the three propositions are designed to kind of work together as a package where the library tax would be reduced and the other two taxes would be, the other two propositions would increase, so that the net effect would be, if voters approve all three, would be to keep the combined rate the same at 5.82 mils. So it is quite a complex, you know, package for voters, several different purposes, and but it's an important decision. Because the new taxes would run for 20 years.
So, the proposition number one, all of these are actually, I guess, a rededication of that library tax. So, you have the reduction of the library tax, and then the other two would take the amount that's been reduced. Well, all three would take the reduction and reconstitute that, or is number one different?
No, that's right. The number one, even though it combines two taxes, there would actually be a slight increase in that rate. So there would be more money collected for infrastructure and maintenance than the current two taxes would produce.
So let's start with this, and then I want to get into the individual propositions. What happens if one fails, or one passes and the other two fails, or two pass, one fails, because they all seem to be intrinsically linked. Is there one that really has to pass to really make all of this happen?
There are different effects. If voters make a split decision on the taxes, the one that balances everything out is proposition number two, which is the library tax. So if voters approve the infrastructure tax and the housing and economic development tax but reject the library tax, then the combined rate of these propositions for next year would be about 1.6 mils higher than what it is now.
So it would be a tax increase. The net effect would be a tax increase.
Right. In that scenario, you have other scenarios where, for example, if voters approve propositions one and two, but they reject the housing and economic development tax, then the rate could actually decrease for next year. So we found three scenarios where it could go down and three where it could go up if voters, again, kind of approve one tax and reject at least one other tax.
Now, BGR has come out in opposition to all three propositions. Did that weigh in on y'all's objection to this? Because as I read through your report, it became more and more evident to me that the way that this is being presented on the ballot is, I don't know how, I mean, bastardized at best. I don't know how else to to refer to it. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, this is a very exotic way of doing this. It seemed that someone didn't really think through this process at all.
One of the things we found just in starting to analyze it was that, you know, you do have three separate decisions that voters have to make. You know, they have to weigh each of these propositions. And we asked the city, you know, could you have put all of this on one ballot and to make it, you know, one package? And their concern was that the state has a word limit for propositions that prevented them from, you know, putting everything on one ballot proposition. But it is complicated, you know, when you're trying to, you know, you may have certain issues that you, as a voter, care about more than others and you may focus on, but it's really all three of these are highly interconnected. And that makes it a difficult task for voters to, you know, understand what the full effects would be. And we tried to, in our report, we tried to break it down and help people understand, you know, what would be, what are the purposes that are being sought for funding? What would the city do with the money? Would it have the potential for effective outcomes? Kind of be some of these core issues that voters should consider when they look at the propositions.
So let's I think this is a good point to take a break. And when we come back, we want to see what answers you did get to those questions about, you know, their strategic plan, long-term planning. Where's this money going to be spent? What is the return on the public's investment here? We'll get into that and more with Stephen Stewart, Research Director at BGR, on the property tax propositions that will appear on the ballot on December 5th. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Stay with us. Stephen Stewart, Research Director for the Bureau of Governmental Research, joins us, and we're talking about the redeployment of millages from the library tax to be split in three different ways, three separate propositions that will appear on the December 5th ballot. Stephen, I wanted to start on page 7 of your report. I found a little caveat that y'all have here, and it kind of struck me as really odd. The council, in the midst of this pandemic, and knowing that they have this redeployment of this library tax, voted to increase retirement benefits by 33% for employees hired on or after January 1st, 2018, and all future hires. Have we been able to figure out the fiscal note relative to this, especially going back retroactively to existing employees that were hired after January 2018?
Well, we can tell from the actuary's analysis of the change is that it could, this increase in benefits would have a cost of about $115 million over the next 30 years in what the city would have to pay into the plan.
But we don't know what, $115 divided by 30. To get some kind of ball. I don't know how this is going to. The reason I bring it up is as I went through the entire report and I tabbed this and I went back to it. It's almost as if we're going to give it and we're take it away because we're freeing up dollars in the general fund by doing this redeployment. Putting some there and then taking it right back out and for the benefit of the employees of 33%, it began to look a little bit like a shell game to me. And I may be all wet in this observation because I don't have the math that supports all of this, but I was curious whether or not y'all looked at it from that perspective, you know, that we're increasing costs, expenditures, and rededicating this and moving things around and kind of freeing up they say it's to supplement, not supplant. But I'm kind of curious because, as y'all point out in your report, throughout the report, there's no guarantees of how they're going to end up spending this money.
Mm-hmm. Right. When we do a ballot report, we look at the capacity that the government agency has to use existing revenue to meet the purpose. That's one of the things we assess when we look at a tax proposition. You know, can the government take revenue it already has and reallocate it to that purpose so that voters, you know, that you could either use that tax money for something else or lower the rate. And so we looked at, just for all three propositions, you know, could the city use its general fund to meet some of these needs that this rededication would address. And you know, certainly we understand the situation that the city is in right now with, you know, the significant revenue decline in the general fund through, you know, lower sales taxes. And our concern was that, the general fund may at this point in time be at a difficult position to try to meet the needs. But the move to increase pension benefits long-term raised the question as to whether the general fund could not be relied upon in the future as the city recovers from the pandemic, could it become a resource to try to address these some of these needs going forward? And so that's kind of that was the context we looked at the pension benefits in, is that the general fund may not be a promising option right now, but if the city can commit to substantial increases in employee benefits, could it also find revenue going forward to address some of the purposes that these replacement taxes would fund?
And just so I have a better understanding, before I truly opine on the issue later, this pension increase, was that for the city to take on a larger percentage of the contribution to the municipal system?
It's an increase in the benefits that would be paid to the employees. So a couple of years ago, the city council made some changes to the retirement system for municipal employees, which is most city employees, excluding police and firefighters who have their own separate pension plans. And the changes at that time reduced the what they call the multiplier for the pension benefits, which determines the size of your benefit.
Right.
And they reduced that at that time. Now this the major change here would be to bring it back up to not quite to the level it used to be, but significantly higher, 33% higher than what it is currently.
So they reduced it, I believe, 2.5% accrual rate, or 2.75% or something along those lines, and now it's going to go over 3.
It used to be a little bit larger than 2.5%, and they reduced it down to 1.9, and now they're going to go back up to a flat 2.5.
And that was the accrual rate. All right. I was just kind of curious. One of the observations that I wanted to start with, and you guys talk about it throughout the report, there's no doubt that infrastructure and maintenance, libraries, early childhood education, housing, and economic development are all worthy initiatives, right?
Right. Right. We found when we looked at the rationale for those taxes, there seemed to be a number of clear needs that the city has in those areas.
One of the things that in your report that was fairly consistent in your conversations with the city, not really a plan, a long-term plan, an outline of a strategic plan as to how this money was going to be spent short-term, mid-term, or long-term, other than just kind of moving and redeploying this money into different buckets with yet to be determined on a spending plan. Would that be a fair assessment?
Right. The planning on each of the purposes varied significantly. So we looked at each proposition and tried to determine, where would the money go? What is the current plan for it? And we found that in each of the three propositions, there were concerns about the planning to different degrees. On the infrastructure tax, the city does have certain processes in place for deciding where to spend its capital dollars and evaluating projects. But within the purposes, because this tax could fund everything from streets to drainage to city vehicles and buildings, there was not a clear breakdown of how they would allocate the money among those purposes. So we couldn't tell, we were not able to tell whether the city would make meaningful progress toward addressing those purposes, which we all know that there are significant needs in those areas. The planning issues became more significant with the economic development tax and the library tax, which we really could not determine a clear spending plan for either one of those taxes.
What I found interesting, and I think you guys pointed it out and made a good case for it as well, we're redeploying millages from the library tax that was voted on, I think, the increase, in 2015, 5 years ago.
Right.
As a result of that, they now have experienced, they have a fairly healthy fund balance. Have y'all been able to determine whether or not that fund balance was generated because they're actually collecting too much tax or they haven't fulfilled their long-term strategic plan? Is there a long-term strategic plan? Have they really moved to the level of technology that is desired by folks, and whether or not the library in and of itself is capable of expanding their service-oriented model that actually could take in early childhood education or some of the other things that the city council wants to do, but it really wouldn't be within the purview or the control of the city administration or otherwise. And, you know, there's a lot of folks that are heavily involved in the library system and what it, where it's going. And, in fact, those groups are opposed to this tax proposition as well. So did y'all find these strategic plans, whether they lived up to it? I know they, y'all made the observation that the library has delivered on some of what they talked about in their 2015 tax proposition. But where did they intend to be by 2025 or 2030? And where is the public able to judge whether or not they want to compromise any of that?
Mm-hmm. We did find that the, you know, when the library received its 2015 millage, which was almost about the same size as its existing millage, its revenue doubled at that point. And over the past several years, the library has gradually increased its expenditures, you know, as it has added new programs and expanded offerings. We did find evidence that the library system has revamped its collections, its increased usage of the collections, increased programming. So it followed through on a number of the things they said they would do in 2015. It has accumulated a surplus by the fact that its revenue rose so sharply and expenditures gradually increased. But there's not, going forward, they don't have a plan yet in place for a long-term strategic vision, which is whether it's what the city is proposing, this sort of reimagining of library services to, you know, find more efficient and effective ways to deliver them to the public, or some other approach. There's not the plan in place that voters can look at right now and say, I understand what this plan is, and the, you know, the proposed 40% tax cut, you know, makes sense in that context. There's not enough information there to tell right now where the library is headed. And so that was part of our overall recommendation.
Opposition to it, right. You know,
was that if these questions need to be answered, go ahead and take the time and do the planning and address the future vision. And
Stephen, I apologize. I got to interrupt you. I got to get to a break. Sure. Let me thank you for joining us today. This is a very complex proposition. We appreciate your time and have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All righty. Stephen Stewart, Research Director of BGR. We'll be right back.
Amazon Prime members now get free grocery delivery with a minimum order. You'll get your groceries with 2-hour delivery. So in that time, you can finally figure out where the biblioteca is, learn how to play the acoustic guitar, and I guess get a puka shell necklace. Do a makeup tutorial, but realize halfway contouring is hard, and you're beautiful just as you are. Whatever it is you're doing with your time, your shopper will be carefully picking out your favorite organic meats, produce, dairy, and snacks while providing contactless delivery to your door. Free 2-hour grocery delivery, now with Prime.